The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com. College students reflect on graduation amid massive campus protests. This article was written by Rachel Gianfaza on May 3rd. As widespread protests against Israel's war in Gaza engulf campuses across the United States, the graduating class of 2024 is once again witnessing world events upend their senior year. This is the same class of students whose final semester of high school was turned upside down by the COVID-19 pandemic, with lockdowns in the U.S. starting in March 2020. 4 years later, as pro-Palestinian demonstrators face suspensions, arrests, and threats of expulsion on campuses across the country, the end of their college experience has also taken an abrupt turn. While these two events are markedly different, students who spoke to Teen Vogue say their hopes for a normal school experience keep collapsing in the face of global crises. I had an online commencement ceremony when I graduated high school in 2020. Last week, many of my classes were moved online or canceled. I'm not jaded by this after a whole year of online classes and a semester's worth of social distancing and masking, said Eli, a 22-year-old senior at the University of Southern California, which has canceled its main stage graduation altogether, citing safety concerns. Like other students Teen Vogue spoke to for this story, Eli asked to use only his first name so he could speak candidly about the situation on campus. USC had already decided to cancel Muslim student Asna Tabassum's valedictorian speech over what Provost Andrew Guzman called substantial risks relating to security and disruption at the commencement. Tabassum, who received criticism from pro-Israel groups on campus, said in a statement that she was profoundly disappointed that the university is succumbing to a campaign of hate meant to silence my voice. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations continue on USC's campus, where police have detained protesters. There is no way not to be aware of how tense the times are, Eli said. It is almost reminiscent of the USC COVID policies with limited campus access. We must present student IDs to enter campus, and only two access points are open. At night, when the Department of Public Safety and Los Angeles Public Department show up in full force, the environment changes for the worse. Though he has not participated in the demonstrations, he has delivered food and water to friends who have. I'm almost indifferent to all of the pageantry, but I understand the significance of the event being a formal closure to my college experience, Eli said in an email, stressing that he was more disappointed by the school's decision to cancel Tabassum's speech. My main concern is that our valedictorian will not speak, which is a fundamental attack on the much-deserved honor bestowed upon her. On the East Coast, Columbia University has seen a massive police presence on the school's Morningside campus. On April 30th, officers descended on Hamilton Hall, a campus building that students had occupied, forcibly clearing the building and the encampment outside. The university had already moved classes online for the rest of the semester following days of protests that had left some pro-Israel students and faculty on campus feeling frightened due to reports of anti-Semitic language. The students behind Columbia's encampment, some of whom are Jewish, have denounced the actions of inflammatory individuals who do not represent us. In Texas, on April 24th, where the Palestine Solidarity Committee at the University of Texas at Austin organized a protest, more than 50 people were arrested after police entered on foot, by bike, motorcycle, and horseback. Another 34 students were arrested at an anti-war demonstration on campus several days later. And at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill on April 30th, 36 protesters were detained and 6 were arrested at the Campus Triangle Gaza Solidarity Encampment. As the number of campuses with police activity grows, and as more schools make plans for dealing with demonstrations during graduation, students describe feeling tense, frustrated, and even numb. Many students involved in the demonstrations say they've grown accustomed to protesting over the past few years and say the activity this spring is no different. Some lament a hostile environment on campus, and many are upset with administrators dispatching police to quell the demonstrations. The demonstrations over the past year, and this past week in particular, distill what has been most important about college to me. Me and the people I love standing up together for what we believe in, caring for one another, and keeping each other safe, said Sheena, a 21-year-old senior at UNC Chapel Hill, studying information science and comparative literature. She had joined a school walkout for the prevention of gun violence after the 2018 Parkland school shooting, Black Lives Matter protests in 2020, and anti-Starbucks protests over the company's reaction to unionization efforts. The police presence has felt violent and hateful. It's hard to describe what it's like to be up against police, to look them in the eyes, she said of her recent participation in the pro-Palestine demonstrations. Though Sheena said, graduating high school amidst COVID was obviously terrible, she believes today's circumstances are quite different. Bringing police onto campus is a choice. These choices are intentionally made by the administration to escalate, so I feel much angrier about the decision to bring riot police onto campus to assault and surveil students rather than the presence of tents on the lawn or a pandemic that shut down the country. In an email to Teen Vogue, a spokesperson for UNC Chapel Hill said, law enforcement officials were on hand to enforce state law and university policies. Devin, a 22-year-old first-generation student at the University of Texas at Austin, hasn't participated in any of the demonstrations on campus. But as an ally of the demonstrators, he said, the general vibe of campus has been super tense lately. It's really disheartening to walk to class and see your classmates, peers, friends getting maced, getting arrested, being thrown on the ground, Devin said. As an on-campus tour guide, he was showing prospective students and families around amid major police activity on campus last week. The main message that I tried to give them was that coming to a big university like UT, the great thing about it is that you get to have big conversations with people you disagree with, and that's kind of our mantra here, he said. I'd like to think that it shows the power of our students willing to use their voice at UT. Duncan, a 22-year-old senior at USC, said that while the demonstrations, he hasn't participated out of fear for his safety, haven't impacted his academic and social life, the administration's handling of the situation has. It has been USC's decision to lock down campus, restrict entry and exit, to two inconvenient locations and change operating hours without informing its students or faculty that has impacted my academic and social life. They have locked buildings and classrooms and changed library hours without warning, even as finals begin this week, he said. Reached for comment, a USC spokesperson directed Teen Vogue to public statements about campus access points and a campus updates page. It's just kind of unbelievable, said Liza, 21, and a senior at the University of Indiana, where police detained people at a pro-Palestine demonstration. Liza is Jewish and has participated in counter-protests for Israel. It almost feels like we're numb to it. The last time we were graduating, there was another very serious matter that was occurring, she said, referring to the Black Lives Matter protests in the summer of 2020 that she participated in. In high school, my graduation didn't really matter. I have vivid memories of it, but I just didn't feel like it was that big of a deal. And kind of similarly now, my parents are so excited to come up for graduation, but it just feels like my life is absorbed by the news, she said. I also feel like it's causing a lot of division with graduation coming up, Liza said. I want to feel united with my senior class, and that's just not how I feel at all. It's obviously a crazy time to be graduating, but I feel that's just kind of what we've come to expect as Gen Z folks. In high school, we were doing all the violence prevention organizing and climate organizing, and then the pandemic, and then the George Floyd uprising our senior year. I had prom canceled because of the pandemic. I was active in organizing for racial justice, said Jonah Gottlieb, 22, a senior at UC Berkeley, where at least 150 tents have been pitched. This just feels to me like a continuation of that. I'm a history major, and I turned in my senior thesis on Friday from my tent, he said. Priya, 23, and a senior at George Washington University in D.C., missed her optional thesis presentation because she was in the encampment on campus. It was something I was really looking forward to. I've worked really hard on my thesis, and it was something I've been very proud of, said Priya, who wrote her thesis on public culture in occupied Kashmir and Palestine, she said. Because it's about Palestine, it felt like almost a betrayal to leave the encampment and go away from it. Priya took a gap year, and while she didn't graduate high school amid the pandemic, she started her freshman year of college during it, online at home. It kind of comes full circle, she said. I struggled to find community at my university. Being part of this encampment has made me feel like I am actually a part of a community. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Cash Daniels and the Cleanup Kids are cleaning and conserving America's rivers. This article was written by Allie Maloney on April 25th. Cash Daniels has always been interested in rivers and waterways. The obsession started at 7 when he learned the Tennessee River in his home state was among the most polluted with microplastics in the world. At 9, he attended Ocean Heroes Boot Camp, a camp for kids who are interested in starting campaigns focused on sustainability issues. There, Cash met Ella Grace, and the pair used their second year at camp as a launchpad for an ongoing movement led by young people whose energy and personal experience drive the environmental movement forward. Ella, now 13, and Cash, 14, founded the Cleanup Kids, a nonprofit engaging the environmental leaders of tomorrow in work that makes substantive change. Together, They were honorees for the 2021 Gloria Barron Prize for Young Heroes for their work rallying others to engage in community cleanups, leading plastic pollution education sessions, and speaking around the world. They've become accustomed to travel, seeking experiences unique to location. In each place they've visited, the cleanup kids have found smart people contributing great ideas. Along the way, Cash has been inspired knowing conservation efforts are underway elsewhere. The sheer amount of waste in our rivers can be overwhelming, and Cash has removed more than 30,000 pounds of trash from the Tennessee River. "I have been across the entire state of Tennessee," Cash tells Teen Vogue. He and the cleanup kids regularly work with state parks and the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, and meet with state legislators in Nashville at least once a year to discuss environmental public policy. In May, Cash will learn firsthand about Alaska's wildlife and conservation efforts, and in July, he's on to Costa Rica for a research trip to tag sharks, rays, and study sea turtles. He's snorkeled with turtles in Mexico, traveled to the Bahamas to dive with tiger sharks, and visited Rio Matauga in Guatemala. Cash often travels to Florida to scuba dive and do research with mentors. It was in Florida that he saw organizers promote the idea of monofilament bins, which are installed along shorelines and intended for fishing waste, like extra lines. "I wondered how I could make them work in Tennessee and adjusted the design for our specific program, which has now spread across the whole state and has been introduced into our state parks environmental program as well," he says. Cash and his community have also installed bins in Florida and Georgia and recently worked with Rivers Are Life to install 50 more throughout the Great Lakes Bay region in Michigan. He's also worked along the Mississippi River, which supplies nearly 20 million people with drinking water, and altogether, from these bins, he's collected over 2,000 miles of fishing line. "I believe you won't protect what you don't love, and you can't love something you have no knowledge or experience with," Cash says. As a young river steward, Cash doesn't back away from hot-button topics. Consider dam removal. Environmental efforts intended to restore ecology within waterways that have been blocked by human-built dams, which are sometimes met with resistance from those who believe the benefits of dams outweigh their environmental impacts. Chattanooga and Nashville used to have huge floods that were devastating, and those are more manageable because of the dam systems we have now, Cash explains. On the other hand, there are fish species here that can no longer migrate to their spawning grounds and are becoming more and more threatened and/or endangered. Cash cites the Snake River Dam's removal in Washington as an example of a model that needs changing. "Those dams have caused the salmon population to plummet," he says, "and if not addressed, these fish are likely to become extinct." But decisions that impact waterways are complicated and must be approached carefully and with a lot of consideration, he says. While environmentalists may see removal as a win, Cash notes that issues arise from the removal process itself. "The issue is further complicated because we also rely heavily on hydroelectric power, which dams provide. So breaching or demolishing a dam would have a significant impact on any infrastructure." Travel has opened Cash's eyes to how people and habitat are connected and how all living creatures are dependent on waterways' health. When asked about his peer influences and campaigns that have inspired him, he thinks globally. "I know a kid here in the States who raises money and is working hard to save orangutans and speak up vigilantly about the palm oil plantations that are devastating wildlife populations in Indonesia. I know a kid in Australia who focuses on saving a specific threatened bird species and addresses deforestation by speaking publicly on these issues, he says. Ella addresses the rapidly declining shark populations by speaking with school groups and also addressing government leaders. Someone else Cash knows in Canada speaks frequently about climate change and spreads awareness via his YouTube channel. There are so many more, he says. I have met kids from all over the world who are doing something to better the planet because they saw a need. Social media expands access to other conservationists, inspiring Cash, and creating far-flung networks. Cash relies on mentors and teachers to show him what paths are available, and photography and cinematography are a comfortable fit into his future, he says. They are career paths he is seriously considering. I feel as if you can show people other parts of the world they may otherwise never see. You can show the animals, places and issues they are completely unaware of, he says. Bringing these experiences to the masses via film is necessary so we can truly appreciate our planet and what it has to offer. Bolstered by his peers' work, Cash feels additionally supported by Ella and the supportive adults in his life. He thinks the suggestion that he and his peers should sit back and do kid things is baffling. Why would I wait for someone to address the issues I see when I am indeed someone? Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Khloe Kardashian thought her brother Rob Kardashian could be the father of her son Tatum. This article was written by Sarah Delgado on May 9th. Another day, another unexpected revelation from a member of the Kardashian family. This time, we have Khloe Kardashian admitting she made Tristan Thompson take not one, not two, but three paternity tests out of fear that the biological father of her son Tatum might be her own brother, Rob Kardashian. Yep. Khloe Kardashian recently appeared on her OBGYN Dr. Thais Aliabadi's She MD podcast and admitted that her son Tatum, whom she shares with ex Tristan Thompson, looked so much like Rob Kardashian when he was born that she actually thought there had been a mishap with the sperm samples. Tatum was born via surrogate. My son looks just like my brother, and my brother is one of my favorite people, Kardashian recounted. To make matters worse, Dr. Aliabadi agreed, saying that Tatum looks more like Rob than he looks like anyone else, and that he could be his son, which prompted the big revelation. Because he's an IVF baby or a surrogate baby, I was like, Rob, did you ever donate sperm somewhere? Kardashian shared before revealing that she made Tristan do three DNA tests for Tatum. He was so offended, and I'm like, but he doesn't look like you. Of course, Kardashian was partly joking. But she also said that the chances of her ending up having a son with her own brother would not surprise her, given their family antics, but that it admittedly would be so disgusting. Aside from the "I thought I had my brother's baby" of it all, Kardashian also opened up about another side of surrogacy that she struggled with, explaining that she felt detached from Tatum throughout the pregnancy, which took her a while to get over. The entire pregnancy of my surrogate, I admittedly buried my head in the sand. I said to Dr. A, I can't do this, and the whole surrogacy pregnancy, I was really detached. I couldn't really face it. I was very much, I think, in denial that this was happening, she explained. No one found out about my pregnancy with Tatum until a couple of weeks before he was born, and it devastated me because that's when all the judgment and the knives were thrown at me. She had previously echoed the sentiment in an episode of The Kardashians, where she said, "When you compare it between True and him, it's a very different experience, like the connection. I just feel bad. Not bad. I feel guilty sometimes. I'm like, why isn't it the same? But I know it will be." And judging by the many posts dedicated to Tatum on her feed now, it looks like it has. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Hailey Bieber is pregnant, expecting first baby with Justin Bieber. This article was written by Sarah Delgado and Caitlin McNabb on May 9th. Turns out the Biebers skipped the Met Gala 2024 for a big moment of their own. Justin Bieber and Hailey Bieber are having their first child together. On Thursday, May 9th, the couple posted a beautiful carousel of photos and videos to announce Hailey Bieber's pregnancy. In the video, Hailey stands in a field wearing a white lace dress from Saint Laurent by Anthony Vaccarello and a matching veil with black sunglasses, while Justin Bieber takes pictures of her from afar in a furry oversized jacket and a backwards Atlanta Braves cap. The idyllic scene is the perfect setting for what seems to be their vow renewal. Near the end of the carousel, the Bieber's close friend, Pastor Judah Smith, stands between them, reading from a book while they join hands, all smiles. Social media has been deciphering clues about Hailey's pregnancy for literal years now. Fans have been collating instances of Hailey covering her belly while wearing her beloved crop tops, pointing out that it could be an indication that she was indeed pregnant. However, it wasn't until now that they have been proven right. Prior to the pregnancy announcement, Justin and Hailey Bieber have both opened up about their desire to become parents multiple times in the past. "I want kids so bad, but I get scared," Hailey revealed in an interview back in May. "It's enough that people say things about my husband or my friends. I can't imagine having to confront people saying things about a child." Aside from those reservations, Justin also admitted that Hailey still has some things she wants to accomplish as a woman before becoming a mother, speaking to Ellen in 2020, where he also expressed his desire to have his own little tribe. With the success of Road under her belt, it seems like the family dream is starting now. Congrats to the happy couple. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.